On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point.
This land is your land, and this land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest.
This land is your land, this land is my land. It's an anthem, a joyful song of love for a land, for America, and it's a challenge. Is it really ours, as it should be? Woody Guthrie wrote it in 1940. He'd been wandering the redwood forests and along the Gulf Stream waters and thinking about America. This year is the centennial of his birth. This hour on Point, Woody Guthrie, and this land is your land. You can join the conversation. Did you grow up singing it in your grade school songbook? What did it say to you? And are we delivering on that message? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And you can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. In this hour, we will hear from musical icon Tom Morello and folk singer-songwriter John McCutcheon on Guthrie and his song. But first, with me from Los Angeles is music historian and biographer Robert Santelli. He's co-director of the Woody Guthrie Centennial Celebration, executive director of the Grammy Museum. His big new book, This Land Is Your Land, Woody Guthrie and the Journey of an American Folk Song, tells the whole story. Bob Santelli, thanks very much for being with us.
Tom, thanks for having me.
So we're hearing him sing it right here in this recording. What year was the recording and when had he written it, Bob?
Well, this recording's from about 1944 with Mo Ash. It was one of the very first recordings that he's ever done of the song, but he wrote it 4 years earlier, 1940, in Midtown Manhattan, an old hotel called the Hanover House. And it was a song that basically stood in his notebook for a number of years before he actually had a chance to put it down on tape for posterity.
From your wonderful work in the archives, I mean, I'm looking at, I don't know if it's the original, I guess it's the original sort of page where Woody Guthrie wrote it down. He's got beautiful handwriting, very neatly line by line down the page. Looks like a sort of a grammar school writing exercise almost.
Yeah, you know, it's pretty funny because as a person, he was pretty sloppy. He wasn't a great dresser. He didn't bathe frequently, and yet his penmanship was impeccable. And it's really been a boon for people like me who have studied Woody Guthrie, because you can go into the Woody Guthrie archives and literally read everything he wrote very, very easily. The handwriting was just simply terrific.
And this was hardly the only song he was writing in that sort of handful of days right there. He was on a creative tear, or maybe he always was. He wrote a lot of songs in his life, but there were a bunch of others right around this one, Bob.
Well, you know, last count, we think about over 3,000 songs that he wrote in his career. And, wow. And more pop up each month, it seems. But he was. In 1940, he had come east to New York City. He had been in California, and for a brief stay, he went back to his home in Pampa, Texas. But that particular period in the spring, late winter, spring of 1940 was a good time for Woody Guthrie. It really allowed him to see value in his music and songs in a way that having been in California on the radio for a couple of years didn't do. Now he was in the big city. Now he was with, you know, world-renowned intellectuals and people who were very urban in their mentality and in their spirit, and they embraced this rural Okie, who you know, kept a guitar on his back and kind of ambled and rambled around New York City in a way that most New Yorkers hadn't a clue as to how that happened.
He was sort of a sensation overnight with that accent and the whole affect, Okie, as you say. But you remind us he had been in Texas later. Remind us who Woody Guthrie was, what kind of family he came from, how he ended up in Texas.
Well, he was born in Okemah, Oklahoma, a small hamlet in rural Oklahoma. And he, by and large, he came from a middle-class family. But as history has it, he and his family suffer a series of setbacks and tragedies, actually. His mother goes insane and is committed to a mental institution. Later, we find out that she had suffered from Huntington's disease, the same disease that would ultimately kill Woody Guthrie. Mm-hmm. And his father suffers economic setbacks. He grows up in Okemah, but eventually winds up in the late 1920s in Pampa, Texas, in the Texas Panhandle. And it was there that he first comes to grip with the idea of being an entertainer, a singer, a songwriter, a guitar player. He had known music in Okemah, certainly. His mom sang to him all the old gospel hymns and Appalachian ballads, but it's really in Pampa that he comes face to face with the possibility of making music his life.
We'll get back to This Land Is Your Land. We'll wend our way there, but here from 1940. This was recorded in 1940. Going down the road feeling bad, Woody Guthrie, also known as Lonesome Road Blues, one of those old folk tunes that he picked up in Pampa, Texas, playing with friends and his Uncle Jeff there. Here, before he sings, you'll hear him telling famed American folklorist Alan Lomax about the song's origins.
Here's the old song. It was wrote by a colored slave that run off from his master and went back up north, and it's pretty cold up there. So he worked around up there a little bit and stayed in jails and everything and was treated like a dog. So he wrote this song, or got it started. I'm going down that road feeling bad. Yes, I'm going down that road feeling bad. I'm going down that road feeling bad, Lord, Lord.
Woody Guthrie with Going Down the Road Feeling Bad, and you hear that empathy right there in that song, Bob Santelli, an empathy that very quickly showed up in Woody Guthrie's politics. When did they begin to emerge, and how did he describe them?
Well, he really sees firsthand the damage that the Great Depression does to folks around him in rural and middle America. But it really isn't until he gets to California, after he's also saw the plight of the people escaping the Dust Bowl. Pampa, Texas in particular, that section of the country really got hit with the Dust Bowl calamity, great dust storms he saw and experienced. But when he gets to California in the late 1930s and he sees so many people who had moved there, people that he knew, that he traveled with, moved to California for a new life, the promise of what California could bring. And that promise for many people turned into a nightmare. The way he saw people treated, he saw young families sleeping under railroad bridges, begging for food, that touched him deeply, and it never really left him.
And the tension of those, that view of the tough side of life, alongside his love for the land, really ends up in This Land Is Your Land. I mean, when he talks about from California to the New York Island and Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this was from his own rambling. He was talking about where he'd just been walking that ribbon of highway.
That's right. One of the great things about Woody is that movement was always a part of who he was. He was always on the go. And as he went, he took note of where he'd been and seriously looked at the land, seriously studied the people, connected with them culturally and economically, and made sure that all of this eventually wound up in songs. And of course, This Land Is Your Land, his most famous song, is one that captures both. It captures the natural majesty of America, the natural resources and beauty, but it also is filled with a sense of warning and also a little bit of despair that, this country isn't delivering the way it ought to be. And those famous couple of verses that are often left out of the song are the ones that many people don't realize were part of it, and yet those are the verses that really hit home his social and political message.
You've got that love of what he's seeing all around him, the wheat fields waving and the dust clouds rolling and the sparkling sands of diamond deserts, and right up against those the no trespassing signs and people standing at the relief office, hungry. And there he asks in a question in his early verses, is this land made for you and me?
That's right. And that's the real beauty of the song. There's a sense of celebration, This is a great country, there's no question. And Woody Guthrie, a great American patriot, musical patriot, I like to call him. Yet on the other hand, as he's wandering this country and hopping freights and hitching rides, he also sees, you know, some very troubling signs. And the signs literally are the no trespassing signs, the signs that say this land, this beauty is not yours, it's mine. And that really disturbed Woody. You know, he was someone who very, very much cared for the disenfranchised, the common man, the person who had been put off land due to lack of payment with mortgages and problems that occurred with crops and things. This is something that Guthrie felt deeply. These are people that he grew up with. These were his neighbors. And he just felt that land ought to be for everyone. And that song was meant for everyone, including the people who didn't own the land.
We'll come back and look at the song with Robert Santelli. He's with us. His new book is This Land Is Your Land, Woody Guthrie and the Journey of an American Folk Song. We're going to hear from Tom Morello of Rage Against the Machine and folk singer-songwriter John McCutcheon in a few minutes here. You can join the conversation. Did you know this was Woody Guthrie's song? Did you grow up singing it and think it was just born in a grade school songbook? What's it say to you about our country and our place in it? Who it belongs to? Go out of this section with Pretty Boy Floyd, the Okey rebel Woody Guthrie immortalized the Depression-era bank robber Charles Arthur Pretty Boy Floyd, killed by the FBI in 1934, here recorded 1940. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about folk legend Woody Guthrie in the centennial year of his birth and his great people's song, American song, This Land Is Your Land. Behind me right here, from the Carter family, you can hear the tune that Woody Guthrie lay underneath these famous lyrics of This Land Is Your Land. They sang it as When the World's on Fire, a Baptist hymn about rapture, I guess. Woody Guthrie would adopt that as he did so many other tunes. You can join the conversation this hour. Did you know the song growing up, This Land Is Your Land? Did you sing it in grade school? What's it say about our country and our place in it? Teachers, do you still sing it with your kids in school? Do they know it? Do they like it? And parents, do you sing it with your kids? What do you want them to know that this song conveys, This Land Is Your Land? Is it amazing that this was just one of Woody Guthrie's thousands of songs tucked in a notebook? No indication that he necessarily thought it was really special. We're at 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK, with Robert Santelli. He's co-director of the Woody Guthrie Centennial Celebration, executive director of the Grammy Museum, and author of the terrific new book, This Land Is Your Land, Woody Guthrie and the Journey of an American Folk Song. Bob, there's the tune, just as the melody, just as clear as can be. Woody wasn't shy about using traditional folk tunes underneath his lyrics.
No, he wasn't. And, you know, in the pre-war years, pre-World War II, that was relatively common. You find instances in folk music of standard tunes being rewritten with new lyrics and given those songs new lives. Or even in the world of the blues, the great Robert Johnson, one of the great blues players of all time, would borrow from pre-existing tunes. Of course, after World War II, with ASCAP and BMI and a number of the other music publishing rights organizations, that came to an end. But back then, the idea was to keep a song alive, and if you needed to add some lyrics to it, by all means, go ahead and do it. And Woody was not shy about it.
We're going to go right to the origins of the lyrics themselves. We're going to hear from great musicians Tom Morello and John McCutcheon in a moment. Let's get Ed on, calling from Nashville, Tennessee. Ed, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Tom, thank you so much for having me on. I love your show, and your attention to altruistic issues is amazing. But I grew up listening to this song as a kid, singing in choirs and even singing in music class. I think this piece of artistic history and heritage needs to be rediscovered by this generation. We live in a time when cynicism and scoffing and violence and tabloid news is the norm. And like America the Beautiful, I think these values are connected directly to our nation's identity, happiness, and prosperity. I want my kids to have this book. And this is a really great subject to be talking about today. I'm so glad about this book coming out. I was raised in Texas, and I love this song.
It's a great song. You can't hear it without having it stick to you. And if you hear it as a kid, I remember singing it in elementary school, and it was one of everybody's favorites. This land is your land. This land is my land. And then we describe the beauty of it. And I just remember the joy of children, Ed, singing it and looking at one another and just feeling great.
Yeah, it is a time for us to rediscover our heritage. I mean, when the Pledge of Allegiance is being challenged in public schools, I just think there's some of this that's being very disrespectful to what has been given to us. We're a rich culture. We have a proud history. We have made mistakes, but we are liberated, and we are the freest country in the world. And if we will step into that identity, I think a lot of the prosperity issues that we're dealing with right now in free enterprise and just being able to live will be solved.
Ed, you raised so many issues in one call there, and I'm so glad for it. I wish we had Woody Guthrie himself here to respond, because, of course, it is a song of love for this land, and at the same time, as Bob Santelli says, it's a complicated song, and it's complicated politically. Woody Guthrie had seen both sides of how the economy can work. I appreciate your call, Ed. Bob, I want to go to sort of the inspiration for this thing, and it comes kind of from a different angle, and to do with over-the-top patriotism, maybe at least as Woody Guthrie saw it. I mean, I read in your book that it was written in response to God Bless America, of all things, and kind of in counterpoise, in defiance of some of the sentiment there.
Yes, you know, This Land Is Your Land was originally called God Blessed America, and it certainly was a response. I mean, you could hear it in the title to Irving Berlin's song, great American song, God Bless America, sung by Kate Smith. He wrote that because in the late 1930s, it was hard to turn on the radio and not hear God Bless America being played. It's, you know, just right before World War II. America is feeling edgy, and we're trying to redefine our connection to our heritage try and keep us out of war or prepare us for war, depending on what side of the street you were on. But clearly, Guthrie looked at God Bless America and said to himself, you know, this whole story isn't being told by this song. So I never took the idea that he wrote it in anger. And I think talking to Arlo Guthrie, Woody Guthrie's son, you know, he too agrees that, you know, there's no doubt that Berlin was a great songwriter and God Bless America is a great American song. Guthrie just wanted the story more elaborate. He wanted the story more fully told. He wanted both the positive and negative qualities of what was going on in America at that time told in the song. And that's what he tried to do with God Blessed America, later known as This Land Is Your Land.
You may say not in anger, and I understand that, but yet there's the voice of someone who's seen really tough living in here and wants to be sure that it's not forgotten. Here's just a little bit. This was Irving Berlin. He wrote it during World War I, but it became a huge hit around this country in the just run-up to World War II in the late 30s. And Kate Smith, huge popular singer then. Here it is from 1938 on CBS's The Kate Smith Hour, the song Woody Guthrie was hearing all across the country as he rambled God Bless America with Kate Smith.
God bless America, land that I love, stand beside her and guide her through the night with the light from above.
Okay, there's Kate Smith with God Bless America, and Woody Guthrie heard it, all Americans heard it, You had something else you wanted to say. Let's go back to that recording. You wrote it in 1940, but 1944, recorded by Mo Ash. This is of Woody Guthrie singing This Land Is Your Land. And here you can hear he starts out with a beautiful description of the land again, but then he turns to one of the lyrics or more here that we've got that you don't often have in the grade school book renditions of This Land Is Your Land, where he's worried about private property and the way things are handled. 1944, Woody Guthrie finally records This Land Is Your Land.
I roamed and rambled and I followed my footsteps to the sparkling sands of her diamond deserts. All around me, a voice was a-sounding. This land was made for you and me. There was a big high wall there that tried to stop me. A sign was painted, said private property. But on the backside, it didn't say nothing. This land was made for you and me.
Woody Guthrie, when he finally recorded in 1944, and of course Bob Santelli, he goes on in the next verse, in the shadow of the steeple I saw my people, by the relief office I seen my people, as they stood there hungry, I stood there asking, is this land made for you and me? There's the politics right in the middle of it. Bob Santelli, please stand by in Los Angeles. I want to welcome two great musicians into our conversation right now. From Los Angeles also, Tom Morello is with us, Grammy Award-winning guitarist, songwriter, played This Land Is Your Land at Occupy movements around the country, best known for his bands Rage Against the Machine, Audio Slave, Street Sweepers, Social Club, and his acoustic solo act, The Night Watchman. Co-founder of the political group Axis of Justice, Tom Morello, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me on the program.
And with us from Atlanta, Georgia, John McCutcheon, multi-instrumental folk singer, songwriter, political activist, played alongside acts like Tim O'Brien, Tommy Emmanuel, Willie Nelson. His latest albums, This Land, Woody Guthrie's America, and Passage, and Untold. John McCutcheon, thanks so much for being here.
Happy to be here, Tom.
Tom Morello, you've sung this very famously and very lovingly, but with a lot of that political sentiment right there in your rendition as you do it. What's most important to you about this song, Tom?
Well, I mean, when I first heard this song, it was probably in the third grade when all of the more radical political verses were excised. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's a song that I discovered later in life. And, you know, it's a song that is, you know, was written during his time, but it's also a song for our times. And it really is America's alternative national anthem in some ways. And it speaks to, you know, the great mass of America, the 99%, you might say, you know, that is not privy to, that is not on the, that is on the wrong side of that no trespassing sign.
So when you sing this one, what you think is popular because it both lauds the beauty of the country and asks us to take a second look at the rough spots?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not so much, it doesn't really so much ask us to take a second look at the rough spots. I mean, it's a class war anthem. You know, that verse that you just played, you know, I love the juxtaposition between God Bless America and This Land Is Your Land. Even in the voices of the two singers, you hear the two sides of the country. You know, and I think Woody is suggesting in his song that we're not one homogenous, you know, mass of Americans, that they're, you know, there is no trespassing signs and, you know, stay out private property signs. But the genius of that particular verse, I think, is the double entendre. You know, it's on the one side of the sign, it says no trespassing private property, you know, and on the other side, it doesn't say anything.
So he'll do what he likes.
This land was made for you and me. Mm-hmm. Now, on the one hand, he's saying, I prefer the side of the sign that doesn't say private property. On the other hand, he's implying that the land behind the private property sign is for you and me as well, which is a pretty radical statement.
Tom Morello with Rage Against the Machine. John McCutcheon, you've performed this song a lot. How do audiences respond to it, and are there different kinds of responses depending on the audience, John?
Well, one of the things that this song does has an evolution that follows the arc that Tom has just talked about. Most people grew up knowing the song. I did, had no idea it was actually written by anybody. I mean, when I learned it, songs were just like air.
Seems like passed down from Mount Rushmore or something.
They were just there. So I've always performed it with all the original verses. And it's a great revelation to people. I mean, the great thing about Woody is he was the most inconvenient patriot in that he dared to ask questions. And in fact, on the recording I did in the most recent album, pairs it with a spoken word piece that I found in the archives called This Is Our Country, which says, I've traveled this country and I've seen as many good things as bad things, but there is a look there that is good, if you can just get beyond the doubt and the hard times. So for a lot of people, I think this is discovering the nuance that Guthrie brought to his music and the way in which he asks us to look at ourselves. It's a perfect compliment and, in fact, a perfect response to God Bless America, which was his intention.
Mm. On February 24th, 1940, this was just one day after he wrote This Land Is Your Land, he wrote another song called Jesus Christ. It's a moving song about how Woody Guthrie wrote Jesus Christ would not likely survive in the America that he knew. Let's listen.
When Jesus come to town, the working folks around believed what he did say. The bankers and the preachers, they nailed him on a cross and they laid Jesus Christ in his grave. Now the working people followed him around, sang and shouted gay. But the cops and soldiers nailed him in the air and they laid Jesus Christ in his grave.
Tom Morello with Rage Against the Machine, Night Watchman. You put that back-to-back with This Land Is Your Land, and you see this is a tough critic at the same time that he loves those the sparkling deserts.
Yeah, look, on the one hand, that's a pretty accurate telling of, you know, the gospel.
Yes.
But also it does, give lie to the fact that many of the persecutors of the poor here are also Bible thumpers who would not recognize Jesus if he walked among them because he was, you know, among the great unwashed and certainly a 99%er.
You performed This Land Is Your Land in a number of cities when the Occupy movement was really in the streets last year. What was the reaction you'd get there, Tom?
Well, among a lot of young people and people in my audience, they've never heard the censored verses before. So it's a bit of a revelation that... It's my belief that every successful progressive struggle has had a great soundtrack. You know, whether it was whether it's union movements or the civil rights movement or the peace movement during the Vietnam War era, that songs kind of emerge from the people that speak to the time. And, you know, and Woody's is a very key link in that chain. But his songs are, whether it's on the issue of immigration or the issue of poverty and economic inequality, and certainly in This Land Is Your Land, are songs which resonate very much now in 2012.
Tom Morello with Rage Against the Machine, The Night Watchman. It's just great to have you with us, and I'm so grateful to you for joining us for a couple of minutes here. Thank you very much, Tom.
Thank you very much for having me.
John McCutcheon, what do you think? Does it rise back up as a political anthem, or does it live most vigorously because it's a love song?
Well, I think it survives as both. Taken in the context of all of Woody's music, it makes great sense. You know, all great critics start from a position of love. They have to. And it was, and this is a perfect personification of his brand of patriotism, that I love this country. That doesn't mean that I don't see its flaws. Does it end up being an anthem? You know, I've always thought that the only thing worse than banning a song is making it official. But in the world of folk music, you know, these things are really organic. And for people to latch onto a song that was written, golly, what, over 70 years ago now, it speaks to the timelessness of Woody's music. I mean, he hasn't written a new song in 60 years, yet the stuff that he dealt with, immigration, workers' rights, plundering scoundrels, raiding the public coffers, they sound like they could be from today's headlines. But
yes.
The great thing about Woody is he also loved songs, and he wrote kids' songs, and he wrote just silly little things. He was a guy, anybody who ventures into his archives knows, you asked this earlier in the show, he wrote all the time.
Thousands and thousands and thousands. It's not official, but it's become bedrock. John McCutcheon's latest album is This Land, Woody Guthrie's America. He joins us from Atlanta. John, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
We'll go out with Tom Morello of Rage Against the Machine. This was at Occupy Los Angeles last October. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Near the relief office, I see my people. Some are grumbling and all are wondering if this land's still made for you and me. Tell them!
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about folk legend Woody Guthrie in the centennial year of his birth and his great people's song, American Song, This Land Is Your Land. It has inspired many artists since Woody Guthrie with his many songs, his spirit, among them Bruce Springsteen behind us here, inspired by the Ballad of Tom Joad. He wrote The Ghost of Tom Joad. Here he is on his Magic Tour singing with Tom Morello. You can join the conversation this hour. This land is your land. This land is my land. Is it amazing that this was just one Guthrie song tucked in a notebook? Is this song hot again, politically loaded when they sing it at the Occupy Wall Street settings? Have we lived up to this song? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. My guest this hour, Robert Santelli, is co-director of the Woody Guthrie Centennial Celebration, executive director of the Grammy Museum, author of the quite wonderful new book, This Land Is Your Land, Woody Guthrie and the Journey of an American Folk Song. And he's talking, This Land Is Your Land there. 800-423-TALK. Let's go to Beth in Boston. Beth, thanks very much for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Well, I am a professor at Berklee College of Music in Boston, and I don't teach a music class. I teach a literature course called American Literature During the Rise of Bob Dylan.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to thank you for talking about this today and just say that I feel incredibly hopeful. I have amazing students in my class, and so many of them don't know the origins of this song, and they don't know all of these people who came after Bob Dylan, Pete Seeger, Joan Baez, all of these people, were influenced by this song and by this music, and they're so excited, and they don't know how to. They feel like they're given finally an outlet to talk about the high cost of education and social injustice and. They have someone to look up to because they don't see that in a lot of the pop music that they hear today.
Do you think they've got Woody Guthrie's guts? Or we got some new Guthries coming up in your classes there, Beth?
Oh, we do. We do. We do. They're in my classes, and they're amazing. And they need encouragement, and they need reminders. I think a lot of them do feel paralyzed, but when challenged by their teachers and by their parents and by other musicians, they're ready to fight. They're excited. I'm feeling hopeful.
Beth, I'm so grateful for that testimony, and I appreciate your calling in with it. Thank you so much. We'll get on to more callers right here, but let's hear from a couple of these. First, let's go back to Woody for a second. And this is before the Great Depression and the tragedies that struck his family. He had a relatively affluent upbringing. Here he was talking about that with music historian Alan Lomax, 1940.
I was a little bit different from. I wasn't in the class that John Steinbeck called the Okies because my dad, to start with, was worth about $35,000 or $40,000, and he had everything hunky dory. Then he started having a little bad luck. In fact, our whole family had a little bit of it.
And things got rough, and Woody went rambling and wrote a lot of songs. Beth was saying, and Bob Santelli writes. This came up in the just a few songwriters. It was not all over the place for a long time. Here's folk legend Pete Seeger. This was with Pacifica Radio back in 06, talking about how the popularity of This Land Is Your Land grew over time.
This Land Is Your Land was never played on the radio, never played on TV. No famous person ever recorded it. It did, however, get in the schools, and some school songbooks printed it. And the kids loved it. And 15 years later, there were literally millions of kids all around the country knew this song. 25 years later, practically everybody in the country knew the song.
Because they'd grown up with it as kids, and then one day there would come a presidential inauguration where the song was sung. At South by Southwest, a music festival in Austin, Texas, earlier this month, Bruce Springsteen was the keynote speaker, and he talked about what it was like when he and Pete Singer sang This Land Is Your Land at the President Obama's inauguration.
On that day, when we sung that song, Americans young and old, black and white, of all religious and political beliefs were united for a brief moment by Woody's poetry.
In 2008, in 1962, it was Bob Dylan, heavily influenced by Woody Guthrie, here in his self-titled album, paying tribute to Woody Guthrie on his track, Song to Woody.
Hey, hey, Woody Guthrie, I wrote you a song about a funny old world that's a-coming along. Seems sick and it's hungry, it's tired and it's torn. It looks like it's a-dying and it's hardly been born.
Hey, hey, Woody Guthrie, Bob Dylan sang. Hey, Bob Santelli is with us. His new book is This Land Is Your Land. Jim's calling from Atlanta, Georgia. Jim, you're on the air. Hello, Jim. Are you there in Atlanta?
I'm here.
You're on, my friend. You're on.
Hi. I love this topic so much. Like most people, you know, introduced This Land Is Your Land in third grade, but I was in third grade in 1967.
Okay.
So the song kind of had a lot of relevance. You know, it was such a time of protest and national turmoil, and it was a soothing ointment, I think, or it was for me. And I also loved, we have another song in that songbook, Roll on Columbia, which I really love, from the Columbia River Project. But later, as fortune would have it, in my teenage years, the movie with David Carradine, Bound for Glory, kind of introduced him to me in a more mature time and, you know, when had a little more intellectual curiosity. And what, the whole image of the traveling troubadour and the true poet in Showman. It was just, every teenager with a guitar is the fondest,
fondest dream to pick up a little of Woody. Jim, thanks very much for your call. Bob Santelli, remind us of how this song went from its obscurity in Woody Guthrie's notebook in that hotel in New York to finally being recorded, but even then, pretty obscure for a long time. How did it finally climb up into national consciousness as this iconic sort of Mount Rushmore of folk song?
Well, it was a slow climb. In the early 1950s, after Pete Seeger and other left-wing folk singers get blacklisted, Pete takes it upon himself to make sure that Woody Guthrie, who is now sick with Huntington's disease and basically hospitalized, that his music and the spirit of his music is not forgotten. Pete starts to play these songs in summer camps and church socials and pretty much wherever he could sing a song other than the formal stage, which was pretty much off limits to him. And he really decides that after initially thinking the song wasn't such a great song, says, no, this song is a really, really good song. And he sings it, and he sings it primarily as a sing-along song around mm-hmm. campfires mm-hmm. In groups, etc. And it the natural beauty of the melody coupled with Guthrie's poetic lyrics make it just something that sticks in your mind. And in the 1950s and 1960s, it gets picked up by music publishers and textbook publishers who put the song into the books, and music teachers mm-hmm. begin to teach kids how to sing in elementary school, grade school, by singing, among other songs, This Land Is Your Land.
Was he around and aware enough to know how big the song got before Huntington disease really took his mind off?
Arlo Guthrie tells a great story. When he was in grade school in the 1950s, his mother transfers him to a progressive school in New York City. And he shows up the first day and he goes to music class in the auditorium. And everyone is singing, "This Land Is Your Land." He's the only one that does not know the lyrics. He's very embarrassed. He goes home to his dad and says, "Dad, everyone's singing 'This Land Is Your Land.' They tell me it's your song. I don't know about it." And then Woody actually teaches him the song with all the verses, by the way.
Yeah.
And Arlo goes back proudly the next day and, you know, sings the song with the rest of his class. But the point is that he was aware but not able to articulate that awareness so well. He certainly couldn't sing by the late 1950s, mid-50s. He's not singing anymore. He's not playing. He's not writing. But one of Arlo's chief responsibilities as his son is to play Woody songs that had been recorded by other folk singers. And he'd come home after school and play these records that would arrive in the mail. And oftentimes, the song that was interpreted on somebody's album, whatever it might be, was "This Land Is Your Land." So he was aware. He just wasn't able to articulate that awareness.
Here is that performance of Springsteen and Pete Seeger and his son Tal Rodriguez Seeger. This was at the presidential inauguration, 2008.
As I went walking down the ribbon of highway, I saw above me and in the sky.
Keith writes to us online. He says, "I strummed and sang it just the other night for 3 grown-ups, an 8-month-old, a 1-year-old, and a 5-year-old. Their vote was a unanimous yes." Let's get Michael calling from Waltham, Massachusetts. Michael, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hey, hi, Tom.
Hi.
Very nice program. I'm so excited. I'm originally from Africa, Uganda.
Uh-huh.
And I grew up with this song in my house in Uganda.
Why?
There are people who came over here to help over in Uganda at a children's home, and they always play these songs. And I remember Pete Seeger, I remember those songs, "Little Boxes," and the yellow one, and the blue one, "Little Boxes," you know those songs?
And these were Americans singing that, and "This Land Is Your Land" in Uganda.
Yes, and I always liked this music, and I've been here 12 years. I've always looked for this music. I'm like, where is the music?
We've got it right here for you today, Michael, and I hope you enjoy it, and I appreciate your call. Thank you so much. One more, Carol in Russell, New York. Carol, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi, Tom. I'm sitting right here in school. I'm a K through 12 music teacher, and I can attest to the fact that we are still teaching this song. It's still in the songbooks, and it's very appealing to kids. It's got a catchy melody and not a huge range, so it's easy for them to learn.
Yeah.
And it's universally liked by the students. And as a musician, I was always fascinated by the fact that both the verse and the refrain have the same tune, so it's a little bit unusual in that regard.
Exactly. And what about the politically tougher verses? Are those in your songbook, Carol, or not?
No, I was very interested to hear about that because I was not aware of those, and we only have the 2 verses in our books.
Yeah, I think
I roamed and rambled and
right.
As I was walking.
I think that's pretty common. Carol, thanks for calling. Bob Santelli, how common was that? I mean, did people even know about the other verses when it was put in the school books?
They did not. And why they didn't, it's kind of obvious. In the 1950s during the Cold War, those lyrics were very much left of center. This was a period when Soviet Union represented communism and socialist thinking. America represented other things. So it wasn't necessary to put them in. And if they put them in, I highly doubt that the song would have had the
pickup that it got.
Yeah,
there,
the pickup and the popularity that it has today.
Arlene in Boston, thanks for calling, Arlene. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I thought I'd share a little-known story about the political role this song played in the fight for same-sex marriage in Massachusetts.
Okay.
In 2004, the legislature was about to vote on taking our right to marry, and then hundreds of gay people and supporters were in the State House, and they wanted to sing songs like "Going to the State House and We're Going to Get Married."
Yeah.
I ran up to them and said, I was running the lobbying then, and I said, "You can't sing that song. People will think we're mocking marriage. Why don't you sing patriotic songs, and specifically, why don't you sing This Land Is Your Land?
And why that one, Arlene? Why did you suggest this one?
Because we wanted to remind legislators who are about to vote on whether they would take our rights away that we were Americans as much as they, and it had an unbelievably profound effect. Legislators who were against us accused us of using psychological warfare for singing the song because it reminded them that they were about to take away the rights of other Americans to do what they have the right to do.
It's powerful, and it was powerful right there, and we hear it. Arlene, I appreciate your call very much. I mean, Bob, you remind us in the foreword to your book, Nora Guthrie, Woody Guthrie's daughter, writes that, you know, in a way, this can be seen as a challenging idea, even a radical idea, but she says, you know, this is a long-standing idea. She says it's not really any different from of the people, by the people, for the people, Bob.
That's right. And, you know, in the late 1960s, to just explain what your caller just said, that song was encouraged by Pete Seeger and Arlo Guthrie to broaden, to take that song, and it was very flexible, and make it your own, so that if you were singing about problems in your school, you could sing, this school is your school, this school is my school, or this movement, or whatever it might be, take ownership and use the song as you see fit. And that's the great thing about that song, is that you have permission to use that song any way you need to use it to make America a better place, to, you know, establish your place in this world. And Woody Guthrie, I think, is smiling down every time he hears that from Folk Singer Heaven.
It's his centennial year, 100 years since his birth, kind of incredible. But he really has become, over the years, just absolutely part of the fabric of this country's culture. Do you see that as being revived in this year, or does it not need revival, Bob? Is it just there?
Well, I think it needs a reminder. Woody Guthrie has never left us, that's for sure. But in this year, this 100th year, with as Tom Morello said, you know, how so many of the topics and things that worried Guthrie and found their way into his songs are still part of us today. Immigration problems, the difference between the haves and have-nots, poverty, just injustice in general. These are things that Guthrie concerned himself with in his music in the 30s and 40s, and they're still very much relevant today.
Well, it is a beautiful song to embrace this country and love of this country and love of its highest ideals. Robert Santelli gives us the whole story. It's a terrific book, lots of great images, photographs, and archival material. It's This Land Is Your Land, Woody Guthrie and the Journey of an American Folk Song. Bob, thank you so much for being with us from L.A. today.
It's my pleasure.
We'll go out with Pete Seeger at the Children's Concert in Town Hall in New York City, 1962. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.